Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. This week, we continue with the best and most complete expose of the Jewish Anti-Defamation League, or ADL, a better name for which would be the Gentile Control Commission. It's written by Valdis Bell of the American Mercury and read by National Vanguard's own Vanessa Neubauer. When we left off last week, we had just revealed that not only were the ADL and its so-called fact finders guilty of several felonies through their payoffs to corrupt police officers to obtain confidential police files on innocent Americans of all political persuasions, but that each file they so obtained was a separate prosecutable offense, and that the known number of such stolen files, probably just the tip of the iceberg, was over 4,500. I give you Vanessa Neubauer and Hate and Defamation, the full story of the ADL, Part 2.
Now we're up to 4,500 felonies. Was the ADL brought to justice for even one of them? No. And what was revealed in the Girard case was just the work of one ADL operative and one group which the ADL had targeted. Evidence seized from Bullock's computer indicate that the ADL was using him to compile data on individuals belonging to over 950 groups. And Bullock is just one agent. The rest of that iceberg must be most impressive. As for Girard himself, whom the ADL had sent on an all-expenses-paid trip to Israel 2 years before his arrest, he pleaded no contest to a misdemeanor charge of unauthorized use of a police computer and was sentenced to 3 years probation, 45 days in jail, and a $2,500 fine. The New York Daily News for April 9, 1993, informs us that these were no, quote, rogue, end quote, agents. The illegal spying was controlled directly from the ADL's central office in New York City. Quote, police in San Francisco and Los Angeles yesterday seized documents from a prominent Jewish-American organization accused of amassing confidential information, sometimes illegally, on thousands of people in the United States. The alleged operation was directed from the New York City offices of the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, ABC News reported last night. The ADL has long been one of the most respected civil rights organizations in the country, tracking hate crimes and exposing prejudice. But ABC said that for several decades, the spying operation has snooped into the records and activities of more than 10,000 people in the United States, including many who simply oppose the policies of Israel and South Africa. The report identified the leader of the intelligence ring as Erwin Sewell. Sources told the Daily News that Sewell is one of about 15 people in the ADL's research department in Manhattan. Neither Sewell or other ADL officials could be reached for comment. Quote, we're talking about the use of information from Department of Motor Vehicles files, other confidential files of state and local agencies, illegally furnished and illegally received by private agencies. End quote. San Francisco District Attorney Arlo Smith told ABC. End quote. Mark Mooney, New York Daily News, April 9, 1993. Erwin Sewell, the former National Secretary of the Socialist Party of America, was the chief of the, quote, fact-finding, end quote, that is, espionage, division of the ADL from 1967 to 1997. According to the Baltimore Sentinel for September 1993, quote, in a memo dated July 1992, Sewell praised Roy Bullock as, quote, our number one investigator, end quote. Just months before Bullock's illegal activities were exposed. Quote, is the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith spying on you? End quote. Bill Hughes, Baltimore Sentinel, September 1993. According to the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, the ADL offered money to corrupt law enforcement officers and officials in return for illegally obtained personal information that was supposed to have been destroyed. How many of these corrupt officials were never prosecuted, and how many were recruited during the, quote, educational, end quote, conferences and trips to Israel arranged for them by the ADL's Law Enforcement Liaison Division? The report states, quote, after COINTELPRO, a still controversial FBI operation to destabilize black nationalist and other groups in the 60s and 70s, the FBI, state, and local law enforcement authorities were ordered out of the business of gathering information about legitimate political activity by American citizens. But in some major American cities, law enforcement files relating to legitimate and constitutionally protected political activities that had been ordered destroyed instead found their way to the offices of the ADL, which quickly became a clearinghouse for such illegally obtained and illegally retained information. The absence of the FBI, state, and local police investigators in the field therefore created a void the ADL rushed to fill, with remarkable success, by increasing its in-house, quote, fact-finding, end quote, assets and capabilities, and developing enhanced working relationships with, quote, official friends, end quote, government officials, investigators, and intelligence officers. Some of these were the officials who had not destroyed files of illegally obtained materials or had made private copies of the official files before they were destroyed in compliance with the court order. The ADL favored many of its, quote, official friends, end quote, with expense-paid trips to Israel, where they met with and were entertained by friendly officers of Israel's espionage and counterintelligence organizations, Mossad and Shin Bet, thus creating a major conduit for the flow of sensitive and useful U.S. domestic political intelligence to Israel's spy masters in Tel Aviv, end quote. Quote, Los Angeles court hands down final judgment in Anti-Defamation League illegal surveillance case, end quote. Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, December 1999. Despite its obvious and admitted ties with the State of Israel and its agenda of advancing Israel's policy objectives and gaining power to blackmail or otherwise intimidate perceived enemies of Israel, the ADL has never been required to register as a foreign agent as other, far more benign organizations have been required to do. ADL's former national director, Benjamin Epstein, in an internal letter disclosed during discovery proceedings in a lawsuit against the ADL in 1970, spoke with pride about the close cooperation that existed between the ADL and Israel's intelligence apparatus. In his 1988 autobiography, ADL General Counsel Arnold Forster specifically named the Mossad as having a close connection with the League. The Mossad routinely engages in political assassinations of those it deems to be, quote, Israel's enemies, end quote, around the world. Square One, Arnold Forster, New York, Donald I. Fine, 1988. More than just spying? According to investigator William Norman Grigg, Bullock did much more than spy for his ADL bosses. Quote, in 1993, it was discovered that Roy Bullock had been attempting to arrange a political marriage between the Institute for Historical Review, a Holocaust revisionist organization, and the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, AADC, so the ADL could, quote, out, end quote, AADC members as neo-Nazis, end quote. William Norman Grigg, quote, ADL Campaign Against Tolerance, end quote, New American, September 19, 1994. But it wasn't just Bullock, and it wasn't just setting victims up for bigger and better smears. One ADL agent provocateur had a role as a leader and speaker for groups targeted by the ADL, doubtlessly steering the clueless radicals in directions helpful to the ADL agenda and against their own interests. And he also staged completely phony, quote, extremist incidents, end quote, for the media to inflame fears of, quote, racism, end quote, and, quote, anti-Semitic, end quote, violence. Investigative journalist Laird Wilcox tells us, quote, James Mitchell Rosenberg, a career infiltrator for the Anti-Defamation League, regularly attended and was a speaker at Ku Klux Klan rallies and meetings of the Mountain Church in Cohocta, Michigan, considered a gathering place for neo-Nazis of all kinds. For the benefit of television reporters, Rosenberg also posed as a leader of a paramilitary group called the Christian Patriots Defense League, which was the subject of a breathless exposé entitled Armies of the Right. In 1981, Rosenberg and an associate were arrested on a New York City rooftop and charged with carrying an unregistered rifle. The two were posing as paramilitary extremists for a photographic fabrication, exaggerating the threat from the far right. The charges were subsequently dropped at the request of the ADL's Irwin Sewell, Rosenberg's direct supervisor. End quote. The Watchdogs, Laird Wilcox, Editorial Research Service, Olathe, Kansas, 1998. And these are just the ADL agents who have come to public attention and been exposed in the newspapers. Do you really believe that they were rare, exceptional cases? Or were they part of a much, much larger, coordinated operation? With its multi-million dollar budget and cozy relationship with corrupt law enforcement officials, and with murderous intelligence agencies and their unfathomably deep pockets, how many undiscovered agents does the ADL employ, and what might their functions be? Seeing anti-Semitism where there is none. In Denver, Colorado, in 1994, an argument over pets and garden plants between two couples, next-door neighbors, became the focus of ADL public relations and legal action because of the alleged, quote, anti-Semitism, end quote, of one of the couples toward the other, who were Jewish. Candace and Mitchell Aronson were the Jewish neighbors of William and Dorothy Quigley. The Aronsons used a VHF scanner radio to listen in on the cordless telephone conversations of the Quigleys. They heard Mrs. Quigley discuss with a friend, it turns out, in joking tones, a possible campaign to drive the Aronsons from the neighborhood by frightening them with, quote, pictures of ovens, end quote, and throwing gas at one of the Aronsons' children. Mrs. Quigley was also heard, quote, wishing that the Aronsons would be killed in a suicide bombing, end quote. Although the conversations were obviously facetious, and at one point Mrs. Quigley even said she was saying some, quote, sick, end quote, things, the Aronsons decided to contact the Denver office of the ADL. Upon the advice of the ADL, the Aronsons began recording the Quigleys' private telephone conversations, an illegal act. Astoundingly, ADL attorneys then advised the Aronsons to use the illegal recordings as the basis for a federal civil lawsuit against the Quigleys for, quote, ethnic intimidation, end quote. Meanwhile, the ADL defamation and PR machine geared up to, quote, expose, end quote, yet another, quote, anti-Semitic incident, end quote, and, not coincidentally, totally ruin the Quigleys' lives. Saul Rosenthal, regional director of the ADL, appeared at a news conference describing the Quigleys as engaging in, quote, a vicious anti-Semitic campaign, end quote. Rosenthal also appeared in local media making the same claims and successfully urged local prosecutors to use the tape recordings in filing criminal charges against the Quigleys. The Quigleys became pariahs in their own community, receiving so many threats that they felt compelled to hire security guards. Animal feces was sent to their home. Mr. Quigley lost his job at United Artists. The family had to drive long distances to shop in stores where they would not be recognized. However, the cases against them quickly began to fall apart. The local prosecutor dropped the charges upon hearing the obviously non-threatening nature of the conversations. He even apologized to the Quigleys and publicly stated that the accusations against them were untrue. The federal case was dead because the recordings were themselves illegal and therefore inadmissible. The Quigleys countersued the ADL, Rosenthal, the Aronsons, and two ADL volunteer attorneys. Ultimately, the Quigleys received a judgment of some $12 million, including interest, in their favor for the devastation that the Aronsons and the ADL had caused in their lives. By the way, the Quigleys employed a Jewish lawyer, Jay Horowitz, to argue their case. The ADL probably lost this one case only because they were not fully conversant with wiretap law. Had they not tripped up on that technicality, they, their well-funded attorneys, and their massive PR machine, aided by an ADL-friendly media, would have prevailed, and the Quigleys would have been forgotten, impoverished, possibly imprisoned, and without recourse. How many other cases have there been? How many unsung victims of the ADL have suffered that fate? Or worse?
Thank you, Vanessa Neubauer. You've been listening to Hate and Defamation, the full story of the ADL, Part 2. On our next American Dissident Voices broadcast, we'll tell you about the ADL's direct connections, not only to the murderers of the Mossad and Shin Bet, but to Meyer Lansky, one of the most vicious underworld kingpins who ever lived, and how for years Lansky's granddaughter was the ADL's so-called liaison to law enforcement. We'll tell you about how one of the biggest financial swindlers of the last 100 years wrote a $100,000 check to the ADL and not too much later found all his crimes, for which he had been duly convicted, forgiven by a presidential pardon. You'll learn how the ADL, like other Jewish groups, cynically used the 9/11 attacks as a lever to gain greater illegitimate control over law enforcement agencies and push them to use their new Patriot Act powers to persecute those who expose Jewish criminal activity. Be with us next time as we continue our expose of the Jewish ADL. On next week's edition of American Dissident Voices. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance. I want to send each of you our beautiful full-color illustrated booklet explaining the purpose of the Alliance. In this booklet, you can read about our program to save our race and secure a future for white children. It's entitled Building a New White World. To receive your copy, visit natall.com/booklet. That's natall.com/booklet. Or simply send $3 to National Alliance, $7 if you're outside the United States. National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Once again, that's $3 for U.S. and Canadian orders, $7 for other orders, to Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We're on the air every week, and our news site is updated many times every day. That's nationalvanguard.org. We also have a forum where you can meet, talk, learn, and share with others. That's at whitebiocentrism.com. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to never give up.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout.